Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of February 2016. Welcome to episode 9 of our new ongoing podcast concept. And that concept? It's to just have a brief chat about what comics I read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which makes it pretty much the books I read during February. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost those on my Facebook and Twitter so you can find them. But those posts don't count as spoilers for the podcast, since those are lists. And here, we do some review, some critique, have a little discussion. But first, a little feedback on last month's episode. On one of the recent episodes, I mentioned my fandom of Sherlock Holmes, in terms of reading an issue from the Watson and Holmes series, which I'll mention again pretty soon in this episode. Well, great listener Greg Arujo pointed out that he had read that trade from his local library, which prompted me to request the trade from my library. More on that later again. We also had a great back and forth about how awesome our respective library systems are in terms of adding trade paperbacks to their collections. The mention of Sherlock Holmes also got Darren Sutherland to reply. Darren and Ruth, of course, are from Trekker Talk and Warlord Worlds. Hi, Professor Allen. So you're a Sherlock Holmes fan. Of course you are. Ruth and I are too, and always willing to give a Sherlock Holmes interpretation a try. Since you don't mind reading the occasional manga, you might enjoy the excellent anime series Sherlock Hound, done by the brilliant director Hayao Miyazaki. This is a 26-episode series that features anthropomorphic versions of Holmes and Watson, but in the hands of Miyazaki, the series is fun and enjoyable. Plus, it includes lots of nods to Jules Verne. Another bonus! Thanks, guys. I like the way you think. That episode's Facebook and Twitter posts were shared by the Sutherlands, Clinton Robeson of his Coffee and Comics blog, Ed Moore of the Mighty Thorcast, and other shows at Teal Productions. And since I mentioned Mercy St. Clair in that episode, the Sutherlands linked to the official Trekker page on Facebook, and they shared the episode, which was exciting. So as always, to everyone, thanks for the feedbacks. And now, on to the books I read last month. And as I do for these episodes, I'm categorizing the books, and we start with the books that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. The aforementioned Watson and Holmes 2 through 5. I plucked number 1 from the quarter bin a couple months ago, and I'm going to talk about that soon on episode 70 of the quarter bin. And as I just mentioned, Greg Arujo pointed out to me the fact that there was a trade available. I read the whole trade and decided that I'm going to include a discussion of these issues in that quarter bin episode. So I'm sort of going to sneak it in to a quarter bin episode 70. Doom 2099, 5 through 7. I probably should have listed this one first because this was for quarter bin 69, where every episode ending in a 9 for a while, we've worked through issues of my favorite comic book series, Doom 2099. There were some battles in cyberspace. As I've mentioned, one of the drawbacks of reading a book in between the time it was written and the time it takes place is just our understanding of science or tech has changed so dramatically. And reality is so far outstripped what is portrayed here that it's not just dated. It's a little hard to read. But fear not. There was more than enough doom to make up for that minor problem. Captain America 1 through 9 and 11 through 14. This is Ed Brubaker's Winter Soldier storyline, and it is terrific. I read it 4 or 5 years ago, and so I put my dibs in for covering it on Blaine Dowler's Unofficial Marvel 75 podcast, and Emily joined me for that discussion, as she enjoyed the Cap movies and she can speak to the Tumblr world's love of Bucky. This miniseries landed at number 9 on that list. I think it's pretty close to deserving to be up that high. It is really good. Again, for a lot more detail, Emily and myself and Blaine Dowler talk about that in episode 9, and that ought to be out in the middle of April or so. Batman, 519 and 520, technically speaking, only 520 was from my appearance on episode 114 of Stella's Excellent Batgirl to Oracle podcast, but I had both in my collection, so I figured I ought to read 519 to prep me for discussing 520. So I can talk about 519 just a little bit here. And it was pretty good. It's Batman going up against Black Mask, and there's a good bit of coverage given to the supporting characters. Detective Bullock gets some space, and that's always good. But the key scene is James Gordon being replaced as commissioner by Sarah, who I guess is his estranged wife at this point. While they're having an awkward and uncomfortable conversation in his old office, which is her new office, you get small inset panels of the name James being scratched off the office door and the name Sarah being painted in its place. Good stuff. But you have to listen to Batgirl to Oracle to hear me and Stella talk all about 520. And we managed to talk a lot about 520. In terms of books I read to listen to podcasts, there's Who's Who Update 88, number one. I picked this one up last year sometime knowing that eventually Shag and the other guy would get around to it on the Who's Who podcast, part of the brand new Fire and Water Network. I enjoyed the book, and I enjoyed the episode. It's always fun to have a book to follow along with while listening to a podcast. We've got Trekker by Ron Randall. I read pages 247 to, I think, 272 of the Omnibus, which are parts 3 and 4 of the excellent Sins of the Father storyline. The story was really, really strong, filling in a lot of Mercy's backstory. Again, for more details, listen to episode 14 of Trekker Talk, featuring Darren and Ruth, great friends of the Relatively Geeky Network. On to the new comics that I read right off the shelves. These are all from DC, meaning they're all going to get canceled soon, and not all of them will get rebirthed. But we'll deal with that later. Right now, we have three to talk about. DC Bombshells number 9. In the Europe of 1940, we find that there's a conspiracy between the dead on the Earth, led by Baroness Paula von Gunther, and the Atlantans under the sea. The end game is for the Nazis to take the world above and the demonic undead the world below. So there's a lot of Wonder Woman and Baroness action, as well as Mira battling under the seas, and we have Stargirl escaping the parents she had just met a few issues back to reunite with her sister Supergirl and Mira to defend London from Nazis and hordes of the undead. And yes, it is as good as it sounds. Starfire 9. Corey adopts a pet from her homeworld. Or maybe she and Saul get adopted by a pet from her homeworld. It's sort of hard to tell. And then Corey and the sheriff and Atlee, the other alien in town, head to Atlee's hometown, which is in the center of the Earth, through a portal in the Everglades. Because Florida. They have some strange adventures along the way, but seem happy when they arrive, until the last panel, where it appears that Atlee's land is being invaded. Constantine the Hellblazer 9. This is the issue where John Constantine gets dragged to hell. No, that's actually what happens to him and Papa Midnight. And they have a face-to-face with the demon Neron, best known for being the antagonist in Underworld Unleashed. More on that miniseries later. My favorite moment was when John and Midnight were trying to make an escape plan. Constantine says in frustration, "It's you and me we're talking about here. Between us, we have to know somebody in hell." And they do, and on the last page, John walks right out of hell into the world of fairy. And on to the regular reading that I did. And I read some actual funny books, like Looney Tunes number 22, which is not nearly as old as it sounds, though it was from 1978. This one started with a pretty good Bugs Bunny story involving counterfeit money that causes many problems, mostly for Elmer Fudd. I love Daffy Duck, and his story was pretty good. Tweety and Sylvester was okay, especially when Yosemite Sam showed up for no explicable reason. But the highlight of the issue, remember that this was 1978, was the Hostess fruit pie ad featuring Casper the Friendly Ghost. That was worth 25 cents. Archie 372 from 1989. This one I picked up for a quarter to read and drop off at my doctor's office or send up to the Comics Corps of Canada for their Comics for Kids in Hospitals program. Pretty fun and obviously quick read. A standard-sized Archie book has four full stories in it, meaning five or six pages. And there is really some skill in delivering a beginning, a middle, and an end. The end's usually a punchline of some kind. In only five or six pages. Two of the stories involved Archie's dad, a character I wasn't all that familiar with. I just don't have a memory of his parents being major supporting characters back when I was a more active reader of Archie. So I didn't have quite the connection to the story in those cases that I have had with prior readings of Archie. Archie and Friends, number two. Again, this one sounds like it should be really old, number two. But obviously there was a reboot somewhere along the line, because it's from 1992. And it's pretty much not so good. The main story is a three-parter, for one thing, about saving the local drive-in and an aging Hollywood starlet who's been flown in, and just a lot of over-the-top nonsense. The last part was a Sabrina story, and that was pretty good. It had a nice, funny ending. But this was totally one of the weaker of the Archie books I've picked up in the last 6 months or so. In general, I've found that the older an Archie book is, the better it probably is. Books from the late 60s and early 70s are probably better than books from the 80s, which are better from books from the 90s, etc., etc. Now, back in October of 2012, I did a two-part crossover podcast with the Walking Dead Wednesday crew about Afterlife with Archie, and unfortunately, very few new issues of that have come out, or appear to be coming out. And I have heard good things about the current reboot of Archie. Superman number 12. This is from the Burn Run, and was a Valentine's Day present from my wife. A friend of my daughter Emily's actually saw it when the two of them were at a flea market antique mall, and I guess he ran it by Emily. And they decided that they needed to buy it so my wife could give it to me. And it's the Byrne retelling of the Laurie Lamaris story, which is my personal first choice for Clark Kent's love of his life. Mermaids and superheroes. It's not that crazy when you think about it. And both Emily and my wife know that I'm a Clark and Laurie shipper, so it was a perfect choice for me. So thanks to everyone who was a part of the chain in getting that comic to me. You are all awesome. Fred Hembeck sells the Marvel Universe. I've always enjoyed Hembeck's humor stuff in Marvel, from the FF Rose to Destroys Marvel. This book was a collection of his two-page strips from Marvel Age, which I confess I was a faithful reader of. I got it, of course, for 25 cents, but didn't think it was a book that could ever work on the Quarterbin podcast, so gladly moved it to the top of the reading pile. The story's through line, if there is one, is that Brother Voodoo deserves to be made fun of. A lot. Lensman, Secret of the Lens, number 2. Last month, I talked about number 1 of this mini that my internet buddy Paul O'Connor wrote back when he was writing comics for a living. Well, I just happened to find number 2 just a few weeks ago, so snapped it right up. Again, I'm not familiar with the anime that it's based on, so I can't do any compare and contrast with the source material. But for what it was another pretty good issue. We had a great cliffhanger at the end of last issue, and in this one, Kimball Kinnison is able to save the crashing vessel. And he does so by receiving the mysterious lens and becoming a lensman. He is, in fact, the youngest person ever to receive this honor. And as soon as it happens, his father and friend recognize that saving him is the most important duty they have, even to the point of sacrifice. There is a somber moment, and Kim makes some serious vows on the last page. And then the lens disappears. So I'm not sure what's going on, but I want to keep my eyes peeled for number 3 so I can find out. And speaking of Paul O'Connor, he has some new work available. And it was available for free, so here we are. 4 Seconds, number 1. This is a digital first story available through Mark Waid's Thrillbent comics platform. I've heard Paul tell the story, and he got the opportunity to write this by winning a 15-second pitch contest at San Diego Comic-Con a couple years back. The winning pitch was, 4 Seconds is a noir thriller about a petty thief who discovers she can see 4 seconds into the future. That's just enough precognition to get into trouble, but not nearly enough time to pull off the heist that will save her sister's life. Carl Kiesel does the art on this, so it's definitely legitimate. It's serious, good, professional stuff. And between Paul and Kiesel, they managed to really take advantage of the Thrillbent format, what the digital aspect of the comic can do. It feels like a comic, but the click-through aspects of the design elements are really helpful and really add to the experience. I've never found a digital reading format to be totally 100% working for me, but this is pretty close to what I think I may have been looking for. The story does have resolution, but there is wiggle room, I guess, for future stories. And last I heard from Paul, issue 2 is not in the works. But if enough people read the story on Thrillbent.com, then maybe, maybe. Again, full disclosure, I'm biased. I like Paul, and I would love for this to become popular. But still, I think it's really good. All right, time to play a promo here, and when we get back, we'll talk about trades and graphic novels.
Hey there, my name is Al Girding, and I have a favor to ask. If you're a fan of the Justice Society of America or other DC Comics Heroes of the Golden Age, please listen to my new podcast, The All-Star Comics Review. Grab your reprints, DC Archive editions, or the original comics if you're lucky enough to own them, and let's explore the adventures of the JSA and other Golden Age greats. Follow along with the All-Star Comics Review podcast, now found on iTunes, allstarcomicsreview.blogspot.com, and Facebook.
You've decided to go to a nearby restaurant. You ask the hostess to seat you in a booth. As you sit, you notice an animated conversation among the four seated behind you. They're talking about Star Wars and Doctor Who and something called the Laugh Olympics. These are the people you used to pants in high school. And yet, you cannot help listening. Unable to tear your ears away, you realize you've just been sucked into the Dinner for Geeks. Dinner for Geeks, weekly at twotruefreaks.com.
And we're back. Next up, trades and graphic novels and miniseries I read. I've mentioned the last few episodes how much I enjoyed the Underworld Unleashed miniseries, and a lot of the tie-ins that I found. Well, guess what? I found a few more. Adventures of Superman 530. This one will be coming up eventually on From Crisis to Crisis, probably later in this year, so I don't have the right context to know exactly what's going on. Superman himself is in outer space, while Turpin and Sawyer and the SCU spend most of this issue fighting a souped-up Helgramite. This was all in the days of the triangle numbering, connecting stories and all that. Again, so it's hard to comment on a single book in the run out of that context, because the context and continuity were so important to the underlying Superman storylines. But for a one-off Underworld Unleashed story, it was fine. It really was a focus on the side characters, which I thought was an interesting take. Aquaman, number 14. The first two-thirds of this one or so was a standard Aquaman story of the era, with Mira and Dolphin and hook-handed Arthur and AJ. The details of that part of the issue went totally over my head, but the Underworld Unleashed part was the back end of the issue, in which Major Disaster had received enhanced powers. All he had to do was kill Aquaman, which surprisingly, shockingly, he actually does. Except that it was Thanatos who had recently taken over the throne of Atlantis and was therefore, technically speaking, Aquaman, and then he was technically speaking dead. Bad timing, Thanatos. Bad timing. Extreme Justice, number 10. Never read one of these before, and one is enough. This one had a lot of talking, a lot of crazy costumes. The Underworld Unleashed stuff was at the end and related to Carol Ferris. At the time, her alter ego, Star Sapphire, was pregnant, even though she wasn't. That was kind of a cool concept. And Carol is offered a normal life by Neron, without Sapphire's spirit or her child. So Star Sapphire was separated from Carol in a pretty bloody and messy scene at the end of the issue, and the child was taken by Neron. Guy Gardner Warrior, number 36. Bo Smith wrote this manly story of Guy Gardner showing back up at Warriors, missing one arm, and looking pretty Cybertronic otherwise. It's actually his clone. And since Warrior is full of heroes, including Wildcat and the Metal Men, a small amount of fighting ensues. And then the villains arrive. Cheetah, Blackguard, Earthworm, all enhanced and overpowered by Neron. And even more fighting ensues. That's pretty much the whole issue, actually. Of course, the entire Bo Smith run was covered on episodes of Just One of the Guys, the excellent podcast hosted by the late Sean Engel. Those issues were covered in the episodes in the 50s and 60s of that podcast, so I highly encourage you to listen to that show, listen to those episodes, and get all of the details on the Bo Smith goodness. Silk, 1 through 7. This is the 2015 title, not the current ongoing series. I don't know if this was intended to be a mini, or if this just got the Secret Wars reboot treatment, but this trade contains the entirety of this run. I picked it up because I know of Silk from the Spider-Man Unlimited iOS game. The through line of that game when it came out was the Spider-Verse storyline with Karn and the Inheritors, and Silk is featured in that. And as this series opens, Cindy Moon is trying her hand at superheroing, and also to find her missing family. The tragedy in her backstory was that during Spider-Verse, in order to keep her safe from the Inheritors, she spent 10 years hidden away in a bunker. I enjoyed this one a lot. Very solid. The overriding main plot was Silk versus Black Cat, with guest appearances by, of course, Spider-Man, and also the FF. What I liked about this was that it seemed to capture that same teenage, young adult awkwardness of the best Peter Parker stories, which has also been working for the Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel series. I liked the main artist most, Stacy Lee, who did 5 of these issues. Her style was cartoony in all the right ways, exaggerated just enough to give a sense of lightness and fun to the story. All in all, I'm glad I read it, and I'm probably going to pick up the first trade of the new Silk title when it comes out. Over on the Quarterbin podcast, I recently covered some Marvel New Universe books. And somewhere along the line, I picked up the two graphic novels, The Pit and The Draft. And last month, I read The Pit. It takes place at about the same time as the Justice book when they were doing a reboot, which was the one of the issues that I covered. The Pit was a bit of a reboot for the entire line, where Starbrand does some energy, something or another, and ends up causing a massive explosion and crater that obliterates the city of Pittsburgh in the Black Event. My understanding was that this sort of turned the new U grimmer, darker than it had been. It wasn't bad and had skilled people on it, John Byrne, Mark Grunwald, Sal Buscema, and it pretty much stands alone. You don't need to know what had gone on before, and my plan is to read the draft sometime in the not-too-distant future and sort of put a bow on my new universe reread. Fables 130 to 137. This is mostly the storyline Camelot, and you can really sense that things are moving in the Fables verse, that some long simmering conflicts are ready to erupt, that actions from the past will start to have serious consequences. It's just continuing to be really exciting. I'm sort of worried that as we get towards 150, towards the end, that the wheels will start to fall off, that things will have to get rushed to be finished or dropped altogether. But there's no evidence of that happening. In this storyline, Rose Red is taking her role as an avatar of hope seriously, and is reconstructing the Knights of the Round Table based around the concept of second chances. And Snow White does not like this one bit, adding to an increasingly long list of her current family troubles. And then a servant of the Fates has a chat with Rose, reminding her that second chances are all good and well, but fate decrees certain destinies for certain situations. And if she is insistent on creating another Camelot, then she can't just expect the good parts of Camelot. The bad parts will befall her kingdom as well. My only qualm, and it's minor, is that the cover for the trade is the cover of the fifth issue of the six-issue Camelot arc. And it is kind of a spoiler. It wouldn't have been a spoiler for that issue, but it does contain sort of a revelation of what's happened in the plot up to that point. But of course, when I picked up the trade, I hadn't read through the fourth issue of the arc. So I glanced at the cover, partway through reading the second issue of that arc, and I kind of got spoiled as to where it was going. Again, because the cover of the trade was a scene from a few issues ahead. A minor annoyance, to be sure. And then a series from this episode's unofficial sponsor, Rob Lance of Comic Connection of Oakville, Ontario, Canada. This is Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, and I read all of year one of this title, issues 1 through 15. This is the David Tennant Doctor, and he picks up a new companion, Gabby Gonzalez from Brooklyn. Her family owns a laundromat, and in the first issue, fear-feeding aliens invade Earth through the vortex created by spinning clothes dryers. Yeah, I don't know what to say about that either, but as wacky as that was, it pretty much worked as a premise for a comic book arc, never for a TV show. But that arc was the first three issues. And one of the advantages of comics over TV is that in comics, it's not a big deal for the Doctor to be in America. But in the TV show, that is usually some sort of big, major event. But here, he's in the States, no big deal, and he befriends a girl who helps him save the world, and at the end of issue 3, against his better judgment, he invites her onto the TARDIS. Issues 4 and 5 are a new arc, theoretically Gabby's first adventure in space. The two go to the alien artistic community of Aulamas to find a reclusive artist, but instead they find her apprentice, and things go real wonky real fast. These first five issues were all written by Nick Abadzis, while the next five written by Robbie Morrison, with also a different art team. And that's the secret to getting out 15 issues in a year. One interesting thing about issue 6 is that it has a banner across the top of the cover that proclaims, "New storyline begins here." I don't think I've seen that before. but I think I like it. It tells readers that even though this is not technically a number one, it is a jumping on point. This next arc runs from 6 through 9, and it's a World War I story, and also a Weeping Angels story. It plays on Angel's mythology of feeding on potential energy, with the idea that battlefields of World War I are full of young people whose life energy is about to be cut off. A perfect feeding place for them. And of course, a good opportunity for the standard Doctor Who anti-war story. Number 10 was a standalone, and what I like about this title so far is these adventures of varying length. It gives the impression of fitting the length of the story to the content of the story, and not rushing or stretching to fill the quota. I like that. They break into 5-issue trades, but they split them up differently. The first 5 issues was a 3-parter and a 2-parter. This is a 4-parter and a 1-parter. And then we get 11 through 15, which again keeps the Doctor in New York doing some artifact chasing. There was a time-reverse weapon that he got hit with once, and for a few panels, he was the Eccleston Doctor. It was a case of retro-regeneration. That story ended up involving space pyramids and space Egyptians. Interesting stuff. Very Doctor Who-ish. I enjoyed this first year of this Titan Books run on the Tenant Doctor. Gabby was a solid companion, and in his last bunch of issues, this last story, 11 through 15, her friend Cindy showed up. And what I liked about Cindy is that she gave Gabby a really hard time about just gallivanting off with this strange madman in the blue box. And along with her interactions with her family, Gabby just seemed like a realistically portrayed companion. And I really like that. So next month, expect to hear me talk about the first year of stories with the 11th Doctor. But I think that's everything. In terms of favorite read of the month, that's tough. There's a lot of good stuff this month. Watson and Holmes, Doctor Who, Winter Soldier, Fables, 4 Seconds. As far as single best issue, not to get too spoilery from Blaine's 75 Marvels Countdown, but Winter Soldier is outstanding. And what Brubaker was able to do there is tell a great long story while also pulling off great individual issues. That doesn't always happen. And Captain America 11 is the standout for me. And that's an issue which is mostly Steve Rogers reading the Winter Soldier file. So I'm going to go with that as my favorite read of the month, Captain America 11. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of the books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. I expect that next episode is going to include some more Doctor Who, as I said, some more Fables, some more Walking Dead. I'm just thinking about the trades that I recently got from the library and haven't gotten to yet, as well as whatever I pull off the to-be-read stack. But we'll find out for sure when the next episode comes out, and that should be early April. Thanks for listening. Keep the pages turning.